The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes show.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me. So I am telling you, don't be fooled.
The real Eric's in jail.
And welcome.
I'm sorry, folks, for laughing at Todd Wilkerson's tomfoolery, but I can't help it. I have a story for you today. Are you ready for what is like a great, great story? As a guy, and by the way, I am a guy, I think guys all have this fantasy of escaping into the woods, going off the grid, living off the land, running from the law. This story that you're going to hear today, I have on the line a man named Robert Leon Davis. He did this. He was a fugitive living off the land for 22 years. This is a movie. If somebody doesn't make a movie out of this, they're insane. He was a cop. He became corrupt. All I can tell you is he's on the line. Robert Leon Davis, I want to hear this from you. Welcome to the program.
How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing great. Your story is like truly one of those stories. You can't believe this is true, but I know it's true. Your book is titled Running Scared. I want to hear your story. So let's start at the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a little area called Holly Grove. It's a little area of town in New Orleans.
But I'm saying New Orleans is you're there now in Louisiana. That's your life has been lived there apart from the 22 years in the woods.
Pretty much come out of New Orleans, yes.
And you grew up, did you grow up as a Christian?
Yeah, come out of a Christian household, one of those households where, you know, with a grandmother where you had to go to church on Sunday. You didn't have a choice.
You didn't have a choice. Well,
you didn't have a choice.
But you and I were talking a little bit yesterday. You shared how pretty soon you got involved in crime, stealing cars, breaking them down, selling the parts to a fence. And this just became part of your life. When did you decide to become a cop?
Well, as I was discussing with you, as I was discussing the book, next door to us was a family of cops. The mom was a sheriff, the dad was a sheriff, and their two sons were police officers. And they sort of edged me into that field as a challenge. And I took them up on the challenge. But what I was saying to you before when we were talking was what was very funny about it was that as I was stealing cars and doing all kinds of things around there, they were looking for people who were doing these kind of things. And unbeknownst to them, I was one of the ones that were doing it.
Okay.
And so we wound up being best friends, and they got me to try out for the police department trials and physical fitness, psychological tests, so forth. And I originally just took it as a challenge. It wasn't really nothing that I was really interested in because of the area of the city I lived in was such a high crime area. But I went on and took the challenge and eventually became a police officer. And my grandmother thought it was an honorable thing to do also.
Okay. Now, in your mind, because I know you became a corrupt police officer, how long was it before you go from being a good cop to a bad cop? Or did you enter with mixed motives?
No, my motives was honorable at that time. I had actually changed. I was no longer a thief or a crook or whatever, and I never really should have been that way because I wasn't raised that way. As I was saying, we have 9 siblings. I'm the eldest, and none of us was ever raised that way. My grandmother always guided us in the right direction, even to the point that, I mean, like, we had neighbors at that time that could even discipline us if they saw us doing something wrong. So, no, this was something that I completely changed on as far as being honorable. I loved the force. I went on, won many awards. You know, I was sort of a specimen with it. I got transferred to certain places that were highly sought after. And so I went in it with good intentions until I graduated out the academy when it all started.
At what point, by the way, how old are you at right now?
Now?
Yes.
Oh, I'm over 60.
You're over 60. Okay.
I don't give a lot of details as far as where I live at now, and I think you know why. Because of the fact that part of my ministry and part of my work, as you know, and some of the artists can go online, is that today, I being a newborn Christian or a newborn spiritual person, I write articles and books that sometimes are picked up by international newspapers about things such as how to detect a bad cop, what to do if you're arrested, how females can avoid rape. And so when you're going out with that kind of story, you got to kind of be careful. Because I've had threats in the past, long time ago, from police officers. And they would be like, hey, you know, I wish we could kiss this guy on some rural road at 12 o'clock at night. You know, and I would sit there and laugh because I would say, well, I guess I'm going to be okay because I go to bed at 9 o'clock. So.
Okay, so
that's
this
why
is.
I don't give out really detailed information because, you know, it's a lot of people out here. And I don't want your listeners to think that I'm anti-cop. I'm anti-bad cop.
Yeah, that's what you're saying, is that there's corruption, and when you come out against it, people are going to come after you. So I just asked to get a sense of your story. So you are, at this point, is this the 80s, the 70s, when you are just starting out as a cop?
1979. I'm in my early 20s, maybe 21, 22 years old.
Okay, so so you start as a cop. When do you begin to slip over to the dark side and enter the corruption as a police officer?
Well, once I got out the academy, I was paired with a senior veteran officer, usually with someone with 15 plus years on.
Right.
And, you know, of course, you sit down, you don't drive, you do what they do. And the very, very first day, uniform just freshly worn, you know, now I got a badge, I can actually now legally carry a gun, commission. This guy just started stopping vehicles for no reason. I mean, he just pulled a guy over and just started asking questions and pulled pedestrians over, you know, and asking questions and stopping females and vehicles and, you know, and I was with this guy for maybe about, I don't know, 2 weeks. But the very first day he done that, I asked him, why did we make these stops? Because understand, I'm just coming out of the police academy, so I'm by the book, okay? But everything he's doing is outside the book.
Right.
And the very first day he told me, he said, let me tell you something. What you learned in the academy, we don't do out here. And I heard it and I didn't hear it. Then the second day, the same thing, and we just kept going on and on and on. And it was just like against everything that I'm geared up for. I mean, like, you know, I'm not with this. And so after we discussed this, we had a deep discussion, maybe seventh or the eighth day, I decided not to discuss it anymore.
But what was he doing when he was pulling these people over? In other words, it was something dirty going on, or he's shaking them down. What was happening that he was doing that was not right?
Well, you know, we got something in this world, and it's prevalent back in 1979. It's prevalent today in 2018. It's called probable cause. You just can't stop anyone just because they look suspicious. Okay, you know, you have to be doing something suspicious. You can't stop a vehicle that has its proper tags and everything is okay and the people are driving.
Was he black or white?
He was a black cop.
He was black?
Yeah, he was a black
cop. So this was this racial profiling? What was he doing?
No, well, this happened with black and white cops. You remember, I'm rotating with I'm not with one officer.
Right.
Maybe I should have said that from the beginning. I'm not with one trainer. I'm rotating with trainers. But I'm rotating only with three trainers.
Right.
But every two or three days, I'm seeing the same, you know, I'm looping back to the other one.
Right.
But it was white cops and black cops. But every time I loop with the three trainers,
yeah,
it's the same scheme. It's the same thing.
They're shaking people down. We're going to come back. We're going to get the rest of the story. Folks, you will not believe this story. You will not believe it. You have to believe it because it's true. Stick around talking to Robert Leon Davis. Hey there, folks. I think that's enough Partridge Family for now. I'm talking to Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared. Absolutely unbelievable story of a good cop gone bad. And then that's not even the beginning of where it gets crazy. So right now, Robert, you are just saying that you start out as a young cop and you start seeing these cops doing things they shouldn't be doing. Where does it go into corruption? In other words, what you're describing to me right now doesn't seem that bad. It just seems kind of weird.
Well, it's bad in the sense, if you understand it, that, say, for instance, if you're stopping a pedestrian and you're stopping them and you're searching them, they're not searching them for weapons. They're searching them for usually money. So maybe you didn't get the full picture of what I'm saying. I'm not talking about just stops. I'm talking about stops with an intention. But if the goods are not there, you let them go. But there were times when we would stop guys, and then the guy would take out his wallet, and he would say, "Give me your wallet." Which
okay.
He's not supposed to.
Now I'm getting it. It took me 10 minutes.
Wallet,
so this is a shakedown.
Take the cash out of the guy's wallet and give him back his wallet. Well, of course, the guy is incredulous, like, whatever. But he's like, what do you want to do? You want to go to jail? I'll make up a charge on you. Is this $100 worth it? You know, that kind of thing.
That's okay. This is amazing. So this is New Orleans.
Money, of course, you let him go.
Yep.
The other guy might complain to Internal Affairs, but, you know, as it is today, there's a tendency for judges and district attorneys to side, not all the time, to side with the police officer
right.
against the victim.
This is amazing. This
how it is.
This what,
you
to
know,
hear about this.
That's just how it is. I'm not saying all cops are that way.
Of course not.
There are some cops, but there are a tremendous amount of bad cops. So what I'm saying is that crime was taking place at these stops, at these pedestrian stops, at these vehicle stops, and it kept going on and on and on and on. And it was no more than what I had done when I was in New Orleans as a crook.
As a crook. Okay, so you're watching this. You're a young cop. Where does it go from there? When do you get sucked into it?
Well, I didn't get sucked into it immediately. It took me about 2 weeks when I saw what was going on. I went to my commander, and I had wrote a letter, and I gave it to him. And he read the letter, and he was... This guy had maybe 25, 30 years old. You know, he was ready to retire. I mean, he's a commandant. And he read it and looked up at me and he said, "Robert, there's two things I can do right now. I can throw this in the garbage can and we can act like this never took place. Or either I can send it up to headquarters, in which case you'll probably be dead in 2 weeks." And I said, "Excuse me, sir?" And he said, "Once the word gets out and you get blacklisted, nobody's going to back you up on a burglary call. Nobody's going to back you up on a shooting. We're going to back you up, but instead of getting a minute to get there, we're going to be 4 or 5 minutes to get there." You get what he's trying to tell me? He's telling me that I'm going to be blacklisted. And there is such a term, or was such a term back in 79 with the department I served, that once you was blacklisted, that's it. I mean, nobody wants to deal with you. Nobody's going to back you up.
This is like, I think it's better to work for the mafia. Organized crime.
Right.
This is the level, this kind of corruption. You know, when I hear about this, my blood boils. This is the most un-American, nasty. Yes. It's so upsetting. I'm glad that, you know, we're talking about 1980, but the point is, I know some of this stuff still goes on. So what happens at that point? Cause this, now you're just a couple of weeks into this. You're a rookie. You hear this. What do you do?
Well, I got a choice to make. And of course, you're talking about a veteran police officer, a commandant, looking at you, telling you this, and you're a young little snotty-nosed 21-year-old. And what do we do? Look what I'd invested. Look at all the time I spent at police academy. I could have walked away from it. But by that time, I didn't have the type of morals I was taught that. If I would have called my grandmother, she would have probably told me, walk away from it. But I put too much into it.
Yeah.
And so I made a fatal mistake. I joined the club. And that's pretty much what it is. You know, you either do it or you don't do it. And you got to understand something. It's not like it is now in 2018. And now, police officers now can report each other without naming each other, and they never will know who did what.
Right.
Back in 1979, I have to have my name on the report, and it has to go to Internal Affairs, and they're going to call these officers in and said, Robert Davis said, it's a different situation.
Yeah.
So, as I talk about in my book, you either join the club or you get out the club. And unfortunately, I was young, dumb, stupid. I joined the club and probably became one of the worst corrupt officers.
That's amazing.
At that point, because it was already ingrained in me from childhood.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say?
It's so eye-opening. It's so hard to hear this, because when you think about the way young people look at cops today, they should look at them like this is the law. And instead, many of them have this kind of a view, because it just takes a couple of bad cops to destroy a whole generation's view of law enforcement. It's just satanic. That's all I call it. It's satanic.
Fast forward. This 40 years ago, we're talking.
Yeah.
Fast forward. Now, why, if we're so a good society, why would I have to even be afraid of a cop in telling about how to detect a bad cop?
Right.
In other words, what do you have a problem with unless you are a bad cop?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm glad I want to say this off front, which I know you know, to your audience. I don't profit from my book. Okay, I donate those to women and children abuse centers, including the very corrupt police department I worked with at that time. Okay, you know, for sensitivity training, ethics training. Of course, you know, I'm going to be into that. But it's amazing that I have to, you know, that I live that kind of way, where I have to live a low profile way for you know, talking about the secret tactics and operations of police officers.
Well, it's amazing stuff. All right, so you served for 4 years, and in 1979 that you were arrested? I can't remember.
In 79, I was arrested. I got on in 76. 79, I got a sting operation was pulled up on me, and I eventually got arrested in 1979, which I was guilty of, and skipped bail. And because when I was in the preliminary hearing, and that's another thing, I would have stayed and fought that case, even though I was guilty.
Yeah.
I still would have stayed and fought the case with a hope that I would not get any time.
Yeah.
Because I knew all the sheriffs that worked there. I don't know if you're familiar with Angola Prison.
Angola Prison is a great prison. I know Angola Prison.
Okay. Now, keep in mind, the word has come down, because this is news. Robert Leon Davis, police officer, arrested. So it's all over Louisiana. The inmates get word of it. I've put approximately maybe 27 inmates in Angola.
You're a dead man.
So the word came through the sheriffs that the inmate said to tell me they had a special party awaiting me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is before, when I say Angola is a great prison, over the last years, it has experienced unbelievable spiritual revival. Jesus lives in that prison. That's a whole, I could do programs on Angola prison. But you're telling me in 1979, you know, if you go behind bars in that prison, you're a dead man.
Angola was known as the farm in 1979. Angola had deaths reported every day by inmates to inmates, with guards turning the other way. 1979 also, and this is not something that I'm making up, you can do this. New Orleans, around that time and then as recently in the 90s, was listed as the most corrupt police department in the United States.
Wow.
A tourist had more problems, would have more problems probably being robbed by a cop than a criminal.
Tourists had problems being robbed by cops more than by criminals. Okay. So remind me not to go to New Orleans in 1979. Well, so
no, because the police department now is better because of one good thing. And, you know, I'm going to tell you what it is. It's so simple. Cell phones. The cell phone camera made the change.
Yeah.
Because it could prove something. The camera, body cams, that all made the change.
Yeah.
Remember, we're talking word against word in 1979.
Ugh.
I rape you, you make a complaint, and you think that judge is going to put me or a district attorney is going to pick that case up when I have a pristine record and you a prostitute on the street?
Wow.
But because of cell phones now, somebody across the street that's noticing me raping this woman can now report me, as is always done on news now. And so that was the thing. Electronic age changed everything. It wasn't that
bad. So sometimes technology really does help us. We're going to go to a break. We got to get to the heart of this story. Your story is so unbelievable. I want my audience to understand that this is a true story. The book is called Running Scared. Running Scared by Robert Leon Davis. We'll be right back.
Thinking about you, sister.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 for your chance to win and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years.
Hey folks, trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea. And so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com.
In the Bible we read of a city with streets that are paved with pure gold. We will live in that city forever, and there we shall never grow old.
Hey folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Robert Leon Davis. He was a fugitive from the law for 22 years living in the woods. He was a cop who became a bad cop. We're at that part in the story. The book is titled Running Scared. Robert, you go by Robert or Robert Leon?
Robert Leon Davis.
No, but I'm saying, but if I'm talking to you, do I say Robert or Robert Leon?
You say Robert.
I just say Robert. I just want to be clear. Okay, now, Robert, listen. You are now facing going to jail for what you did.
Years.
What's that?
30 years.
Okay, you're 30 years. Now, what did they get you on? What had you done?
They got me for a basic thing they call I'm becoming a police officer, but that's a standard little thing. But they got me for violating a woman, making a woman. I arrested her driving a stolen vehicle and made a deal with her for 6 in order to try to get the charges dropped. The same old thing that I had been doing for years. And in which she went to Internal Affairs, and Internal Affairs had heard my name come up so much that they set up a sting operation. At that point, even cops saying, well, wait a minute, he's just going too far now. And I got set up on a sting.
So this is something you had been doing for years?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay,
yes, sir.
And so many others have been doing the same thing. So this is cops pull somebody over. It's an attractive woman. They decide, I'm going to trade sex for, I mean, this is like right out of, you know, movies. Yeah. It's just a nightmare to hear this happen in the United States of America. So you're facing 30 years, and you know you're going to die, so you decide to skip bail.
Well, skip bail, but basically before I skipped bail, I had a trial date coming up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you skipped the trial.
Yeah, I had a trial date coming up in December of 1979, I remember, because it was right near Christmas. And I didn't know what to do. I'm like, you know, what does one do? I asked that question in my book. When you know you're going to die, okay, and you can pretty much guess the month you're going to die, you're going to get convicted and sent in December. So I'm going to be dead in December. What does one do? And what does one do if you find yourself a law enforcement officer, which if you do take and run, you're going to have the whole state, include the U.S. Marshal Service, okay, because you're a cop. You know a little too much, you know. You know, you're really a danger. You know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to run? And so I couldn't think of anything. And it finally hit me. I said, well, you know, I got one of those type A personalities, Eric, you know, where I'm either in something or I'm out of it. You know what I'm saying? You can't sell me the package. The best way I can explain myself is I'm the kind of guy that when I go on a car lot, I come to buy a car. You can't sell me one, if that makes any sense.
I got you.
You know, I got that type A personality. Either I'm sold or I'm not.
Yeah.
And I got sold on something that was crazy. And I said, but if anybody could do it, I could probably do it. With my law enforcement experience, I could probably do it. I said, they're going to search for me like there's no tomorrow everywhere. The only thing I could do, I said, the only thing I could possibly do is learn how to live out in the forest. And so I committed to doing that. And before I skipped bail, before the court date, which I had about 3 months, back then, we wasn't using computers, no such thing as Google and Yahoo and all that. You had to go to a physical library, you know. And I went to the library, and I began to study all kind of things, like, you know, how to hunt and dress field animals, tracking, navigation.
See, now, the reason I find this funny and fascinating and amazing is because people might assume you already knew that stuff.
No, but the
idea that you make a decision, like, if I go to Angola prison, I'm a dead man. I don't want to die. So I'm now going to study up on how to live off the land. I mean, this is like, is somebody making a movie out of this or not?
Yeah. I got a couple of people, couple of production companies that has voiced the interest in it. And so, you know, I guess it's fine. The book, you know,
well,
has been out for a while.
Okay, the book is Running Scared. But, I mean, this is just like the idea that now you're going to the library. You're a flight risk, but I guess they don't realize that. They don't think you're going to disappear. And you're studying up on how to live off the land. And you're thinking, this is my only way to survive. Otherwise, I'm dead. So even I can understand, you know, that what are you supposed to do at that point? So you do this crazy thing. Okay, so keep going. So you're studying up on this stuff, and then what?
Well, I divided my days up to certain subjects. I had certain books that I was studying on certain days, and because I wanted to retain as much stuff as I can. I don't want to run through one book, and then by the time I get to the 2 month mark, I forgot what I learned. So I wanted to learn it. I wanted to practice it. I wanted to have it in my mind. The same. I gave it the same. I did. The wood study, the library study, as much as I did with my police officer studies, in which I was top in my class. I wanted to understand how to hunt and field dress an animal, how to tell tracks, navigation, map reading, compass, first aid, topography. I wanted to know weather techniques. I brought a book with me about edible plants and U.S. poison plants. I wanted to know about body temperature regulation. I bought a book by an old English guy named Thomas Bayes that dealt with logic and reasoning and all that stuff. In other words, you know, I want to know what my probabilities were.
This is so fascinating. Yeah. And whenever I'm delighted, I say that I find this hilarious. This is like so amazing. This is so delightful. We're going to be right back. We're talking to Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared. We'll be right back.
In the movie, then I know that you are plainly seen.
That's the show. We are talking to Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared, one of the most fascinating stories. Do not miss this. Before we go back to talking to Robert Leon Davis about Running Scared, I want to remind you, if you go to metaxasforhillsdale.com, they have a free college course on how to kill and dress out an animal in the woods. Just kidding. No, they have a free college course on the Constitution. If you want to know about the Constitution, you cannot do better than to go to Hillsdale. Hillsdale, they're the experts on the Constitution. This is a free online college course on Constitution 101. Many Americans, most Americans at this point, are woefully ignorant. You know, I talk about this all the time. If you are interested in doing something productive with your summer, it's not going to take your whole summer, but this is free for you. Go to MetaxasForHillsdale.com, MetaxasForHillsdale.com. Check this out. And now I return to my conversation. Couldn't be more fascinating. Robert Leon Davis, really, you're funny, because when you're talking to me about studying these books and stuff, this is like out of a movie. Who would do this? I mean, it's one thing to say I'm scared and you run and then you figure it out as you go along.
Right.
No,
right.
You have this obsessive personality. Now you're studying
That's the word, obsessive.
Obsessive. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're studying all these books. You're obviously very smart, and you're doing this thing. Okay, at what point do you say, I'm ready to go, and what do you do when you skip out? Where do you go?
Well, I went straight to Canada. I needed to get out to the United States to let it cool off for a while. And I did some research and found out that I knew I had to go through a whole system of getting out here, because I was being watched by Internal Affairs. So that's a whole book in itself about how I was able to get out the house. Because when you say a flight risk, they did consider me a flight risk. They had a vehicle that was watching my house, watching my car, and so forth. So it's a whole nother book, a whole nother program as to what I had to do to get out the house, to get to a bus station, to get off the bus 40 minutes later, to walk 40 minutes, another bus station. At that time, it was Continental and Greyhound, and it's just a steady thing. It took me probably, I don't know, normally on a bus from New Orleans to Buffalo, where the border is of Canada, you could probably do that in 2 days. It probably took me maybe 5 days of switching buses, and by that time, I went over the border, and the border was very porous at that time, you know, before 9/11 and so forth, and got over the border and had all my supplies. And I remember picking out the prettiest and the greatest forest I ever seen in my life, even to this day, called Gatineau National Forest, about 100 miles west of Montreal. And I was on a old rural road, and I remember looking to the left and looking to the right. And I remember looking at the woods, and I stepped into it, and I said, goodbye, world.
And I mean, this is just, I can't even tell you how fascinating I find this. I knew I would, but you must have been scared to death on those 5 days.
I talk about it in my book, and this actually happened. The very first night, as I'm sleeping in my bag, I'm terrified. And I'm taking cat naps, you know, 15, 20 minutes.
No, wait a second. You're talking about this is once you get into Canada?
First night in the woods.
But I'm talking about before that.
I'm five days, you're
jumping from bus to bus.
Yeah,
they're obviously looking for you. Somebody's looking for you because you're already.
Yeah, they're looking for me. Yeah, they were looking for me. And I'm actually having some moments mentally where people who don't know me, it's kind of hard to explain, but you get into this paranoid thing where even though you're in a different city, if somebody look at you a certain way, sometimes it's not good to be too intellect. In other words, if you get what I'm saying, in other words, the way that he's moving and the way that he's moving, I'm thinking, well, maybe this is the guy that is going to arrest me and they know where I'm at.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say? It's almost like a, sometimes the worst thing to be is a doctor and you get an ailment.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. No,
I know what it means.
I was going to say, if you're stupid, you wouldn't even notice these people, but you
wouldn't even notice it.
You notice So you're, but I mean, the idea that you're taking 5 days to get to the Canadian border, and that those 5 days, you don't know what's going to come at you. You have no idea.
Don't know what's going to come at me, and I don't know how it's going to come at me. And the only thing I know is if I can make it over the border. Not that Canada didn't have an extradition treaty. They still have one. They had one.
They're not used to seeing strange black men walking around in the woods either up in Canada.
That's my point. That's a good point. And that's why I had to go deep into the woods. I mean, like, about like 7 or 8, 9 miles deep into the woods where I would be around. No RV parks, you know, no nothing, you know, just out by myself. And I actually thought that that's what I would probably die at. Because, you know, I said, because where I was staying at, there was, I was a couple of hundred feet from a wolf pack den. There's bears out there, you know, so.
Did you ever see Bigfoot?
No, man. Somebody called me up from a Bigfoot show and tried their best to get me to lie. To come on. I'm like, man, I'm not telling you no lie like that.
And,
you know, it's funny because I don't believe in Bigfoot. Because I always said if there was a Bigfoot, I should have met him.
Well, I do believe in Bigfoot, and I think Bigfoot's smart enough to stay away from you. That's what I think. But anyway, okay, so you are wandering in the woods there. You were just saying that when you just got over the border into Canada, you said you weren't even sleeping. You're taking cat naps. Why are you doing that?
Catnap.
Why?
Yeah,
why wouldn't you just walk 20 miles into the woods and get a good night's sleep?
Well, what I was talking about was, picture this. You're petrified. Now, you get where you're supposed to get at. You set up your camp. You're 8, 9 miles deep in the woods. You're sleeping. You're getting ready to go to sleep. Now, you've read all this stuff, Eric. I've read everything. I got it down pat. But I haven't put it into play. The book couldn't tell me how the forest would look at night when it was looking pretty in the daytime. It didn't tell me that.
Mm.
So now I'm laying down, and I'm petrified. I'm hearing sounds that I don't hear in New Orleans. Picture this. Picture the kind of things that they got there that we don't have here. They got wolverines.
Pound for pound, the most frightening mammal on planet Earth. We're going to be right back, folks. The book is Running Scared by Robert Leon Davis. Stick around. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Robert Leon Davis. Before he escaped into the woods of Canada, he must have been familiar with Casey and the Sunshine Band. I hope so. I cannot believe your story. It gets funnier and funnier. This is a black man in the woods of Canada. It gets dark, and you're starting to think about wolverines.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. As I was saying to you, now keep in mind, I was giving you an example of petrified and terrified. I was sleeping in my sleeping bag, and I felt something touch my leg. And I grabbed my pistol and ready to shoot. And guess what it was? I was so petrified that my other leg simply touched my other leg.
That's better than where are my glasses there on the top of my head.
Yeah, that's petrified. And keep in mind now, before we end this, keep in mind, I'm an atheist by now, okay?
At this point, you can't pray to God to protect me from the wolverines and my left leg.
There's no such thing as God. How can God ever put me in a position like this? Everything Grandma told me is out the window, okay? Yeah, I'm a full-blown atheist. Not by study, okay? Not by a badge or membership, but just within my soul, I don't want to hear anything about God and Christ.
Right.
Okay. Everything, if I can't see it, touch it, hold it, handle, or feel it, I don't believe it at this point. And so I had to make good at it, which I did. I mean, you know, it was rough in the beginning, of course. But it's funny because you'll be astounded at the human mind once it's placed in a type of captivity. You know, one of my favorite books, I don't know if you know the guy or know what I'm talking about, is called The Meaning of Life by Viktor Frankl.
I didn't expect you to bring him up. Usually formerly corrupt cops from New Orleans do not bring up Viktor Frankl, just in case you're wondering about that. But, yeah, that's one of the great books. That's one of the great books.
I'm very familiar with that author, and I realized that what I experienced was, now, of course, he was in a concentration camp, so I'm not equating that part of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that essentially was our experience was what he was experiencing. I began to experience that, where I begin to experience a type of joy, even though I was in a bad situation.
Right.
I became used to it, and probably, 5 years I got used to it, and about 10 years I was...
But, I mean, people are wondering, what the heck, what are you doing alone in the woods once... Well, you made peace with your left leg, and you're able to sleep through the night. I mean, now I got to ask you, Robert, are you able to stay to do a part two on this? Because we haven't scratched the surface.
Yes,
okay,
yes,
so,
yes.
All right, so this is, we're coming to the end of part one here. But okay. So you mean to tell me that, you know, when you said I'm going to be in the woods these years, what do you expect? What do you do with your days? I guess you become like a hunter.
I had days like you would have. I had days where I called watching TV, where I would climb a 15-foot spruce or evergreen tree. I'd take my belt, tie around a loop of my pants, tie it around the trunk of the tree, and stay there for hours looking at how animals hunt each other, how animals frolic with each other, how they communicated with each other. That was what I called looking at TV.
I think that's birds. Way better than the birds. TV that we have today, because there's far less cursing with the frolicking animals.
I was able to see four generations of birds.
Four generations of birds. All right, we got to end. This is the end of part one. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Robert Leon Davis talking about his book, Running Scared. What an amazing story. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We will be back with part two. Thanks for listening.